Welcome back to the New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcasts, live from a Flying J parking lot in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The power is off. We're just shut down, and I'm going to see how far I can get on battery power doing this podcast. So I'm sitting in the back of the ambulance and hanging out in Podcast Mobile Command Unit 8, the Big 8. I'm going to start calling this thing the Big 8. You guys in radio will get that. Well, it's been an interesting trip so far. I have two podcasts to do on Sunday. I thought I was going to only have to do one. So the big challenge is going to be getting to Phoenix tonight and also posting the podcast before midnight. So we'll see how that goes. I guess I don't have to do it before midnight, but I was going to take another nap. I slept for about 4 or 5 hours it was about 200 miles from here, just over the New Mexico border from Oklahoma, where I kind of ended up last night. And I thought, I'm just going to go ahead and push on through. So this podcast, I'm just going to wing it and talk about a couple. Actually, I don't want to just keep doing travelogues. So I want to talk about foreign policy a little bit in this podcast. We're going to do that in podcast 344, sponsored by Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Well, I don't have to tell you that spring is here, although if you're in the Twin Cities, it may not feel like it. But in Albuquerque, it's definitely spring. It's beautiful weather down here, and it's coming to the Twin Cities. And while there may be some snow surprises now and maybe even in May, you never know, I don't think we're going to have any below zero freezing pipes type things. But no matter what, spring's coming. We know that there is relief coming. But in the meantime, all winter, your furnace and water heater have been working overtime. And as we head into warmer weather, Greg wanted me to let people know that you can add your air conditioning to the list. This is a good time to have Ryan Plumbing and Heating check out all of your systems and make sure everything is functioning. Did you have any frozen pipes during the winter cold? Are you sure that there aren't any leaks? How about sinks and things of that nature? And of course, there's always this question of filters. Now, some people are just do the filter thing themselves. Other people like to make sure somebody that knows what they're doing takes care of it. Remember, it has to be at least 70 degrees for Ryan to check your AC, so you can file that away for warmer weather. But it goes for your house, and especially if you have rental property. When you have an emergency, the bottom line is you want reliable, dependable service, and that is Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Think about it just like a big sticker on the water heater, right? They do emergency service. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, you call 612-927-6488. And yes, they go to the suburbs for four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol, where they've always been. Remember, think Ryan Plumbing and Heating, especially for emergency service. In St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And thanks, Greg, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. So I'm sitting in my special acoustic seat in the Podcast Mobile Command Unit 8 and sipping my coffee from the Flying J, which is actually pretty good. Hoping I don't dump the coffee over on top of the computer. That would not be good. And watching the power very closely. Hopefully I can get through the podcast without doing that. So I got up this morning and went into, I stopped at another truck stop. I mentioned this in the open quite a while from, you know, ways from here in Albuquerque. It was a crappy truck stop. And aside from, you know, it's just interesting to see the upgrades as we go through upgrades. Now, in 1989, that truck stop was probably fine. But now when you go to some of these truck stops, they're really great. They have stores. They have luxuries like showers and things of that nature. This place just had bad service, and it was dirty, and the coffee was not that great. And it was just both bathrooms were being cleaned. And truck stops are busy, busy, busy places. But anyway, I'm sitting at the counter eating my bacon and eggs. Oh, that's the other thing. I was going to mention food. These places all serve just outrageous dinners laden with cream and butter. And if that was actually, it's probably not even that good. Just bad food. The food is really bad. And it isn't just fast food, but road food. Why can't road food be good, especially this stuff's accessible? And no, you don't drive into town to find a really good restaurant because you're going to lose time. You know, you pull off into a truck stop because that's where you get the fuel and that's where you get the coffee. And I was like looking at the breakfast menu this morning, looking at all this stuff, going, I don't want to eat cream chip beef, three eggs, and biscuits, you know? No wonder people are gigantic. So I've been sticking to the protein diet the whole time that I've been doing the trip, and it works pretty good. It's good because you don't you're not consuming a lot of carbs, and certainly there's no fast food involved with that. The only thing I didn't do was stop at the Trader Joe's in Minneapolis before I left and buy a whole collection of beef jerky. They have the best beef jerky I've ever had, and there's no point in buying any beef jerky in these stores along the way. Anyway, so I'm sitting there at the breakfast counter, and I decided I'm not going to bring the computer in and go through, you know, the only thing I don't like about the Flying J is they have this thing where you got to join their internet and then you got to pay by the hour or by the month. And I suppose I should get it, but it irritates me. There's something about it that just irritates me. So I don't have the Flying J internet. I just go to the Starbucks. And now I figured out last night, I can just sit outside the Starbucks. I don't even need to go in there. If I get close enough to the building, I can just get the internet from outside, and I don't even have to go in there, you know. But I the only reason I go into the Starbucks is because of the power, because I still haven't figured. Actually, we're making progress on the power situation inside the vehicle. It appears that I need an inverter. My friend Steve, back in Chicago, who toured with Metallica for years, knows all about this stuff. So he's on the case at this point, telling me about my inverters and my transducers and my shore power. And I really appreciate that, Steve. So hopefully we'll get an answer on what I need to do when I get to Phoenix, you know, to get the power up and running. But power is the only limitation to this thing at this point. Once I get power, then I can just plug everything in and sit here and just pull right up to the... actually, I can make my own coffee. I bought a coffee maker, so that's all over there in the special personal cabinet here in the mobile command center for the podcast. So I'm sitting there at the counter looking at headlines, looking at Drudge, and drinking my coffee. And it was, if you look at Drudge today, Sunday, it's just full of all this stuff about the Middle East and the president's Iran deal and the Arab countries trying to form an army or supposedly going to form. They had a conference supposedly trying to form an army. And it's very interesting watching this. I don't know, you know, I don't talk a lot about foreign policy. I love to talk about foreign policy. I think we're at the end of an era, certainly, when it comes to foreign policy. And this Iran deal is the last thing that this president will do if he even gets this done. And we all know how Congress reacted. And from what I understand, based on the headlines, it's going to be a three-page deal. And the whole thing, from the Iranian point of view, the whole thing is, how do we get to do what we're doing or what we've already done and get these sanctions released? Meanwhile, Iran is a really significant player in all of these countries, and the Sunni Arab countries are freaking out about the Iranian potential. I've often described Iran as the Germany of the quote-unquote Middle East. Certainly, they're not Arabs. You know, they're Persians primarily, and so there's a huge Persian history, and Iran, of course, one of the countries that is the cradle of civilizations and dates back years and years. I don't know how much bearing, you're going to hear that a lot. I don't know how much bearing Persia's ancient history has to do with the current situation. Iranian-sponsored groups, Hezbollah and, you know, the Sadr group in Iraq, and really, the Iraqi government, the Shiite Iraqi government, is Iran-sponsored. It looks like, and I hate to say this, but it looks like the victor of the Iraq war, at least as it pertains to the United States, and I think entirely due to the precipitous pullout of U.S. troops from Iraq, which everybody wanted, right, is probably going to be Iran. And that's going to produce counterforce efforts on the part of these Arab countries. People need to know, because you're going to see these headlines that say Arabs forming an army, and especially the religious among us are going to use this as an opportunity to say, look, they're forming it. Oh, look, they're forming an army. And the way it's presented in the media, it's as though this is a fait accompli. It's done. The army's forming, and it's on, it's going to happen tomorrow. It will take them, supposedly, at least 4 months to figure out how to do a joint command. That's going to be an issue because these countries, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, all have different capabilities and all aren't necessarily interested in allowing any of their power to be put under the control of any other country. The Middle East is historically disunited and has historically had troubles working together. I believe it still applies, actually, if you read the Lawrence of Arabia story, his book. It's still applicable in a lot of ways. I started to read it, and then I had to listen to the book on tape because it's dense. The movie is almost just as good. If you watch Lawrence of Arabia, it'll tell you a lot about the end of the Ottoman Empire and the British role in the formation of the current structure in the Middle East. And then after World War II, the United States kind of took that structure over, and we now, that brings us up to date in terms of the Palestinian-Israeli issue, as well as the issues with some of these other countries. It's going to take them a long time to come together, and we've seen, in Europe how long it takes for them. The Europeans are talking about a quote-unquote rapid reaction force, or quick reaction force. They call it a QRF, and there was a lot of hullabaloo about that in the media. And I think I said at the time, that's not going to happen right away. The Europeans want to create some kind of quick reaction force so that they can deploy to deal with things like the Russians in Crimea or in the Ukraine. And the truth is that it will take them at least a year to figure out just a conference on the particulars. And then there's a whole question of defense spending and the amount of money that these countries spend on defense. Getting back to the Middle East, as far as the capabilities of countries like Jordan and Saudi Arabia and some of these other countries that are really freaking out now, I had to stop for a second because I keep banging the cord, and you can hear it, and it sounds like I'm kicking the microphone with my foot, and I'm using a portable mic, and it's very sensitive. I struggle with even how close I talk, because if I talk really close, I almost have to whisper because it will overload. So it's very sensitive. And then whenever I hit the cord, it makes a noise and it bugs me. And I had to edit because you can't, there's a lot of noise around here. It won't sound right. Anyway, where was I? Big question as to the capabilities of these countries in terms of their militaries. I really don't think that they're very good. The Israelis probably obviously have the best army in the Middle East, the highest level military capabilities overall in terms of combined forces, armor, air, and all that stuff. I don't know how good the Saudis are. I've talked to people over the years about it, and I've exchanged emails over the years with people about it, and the American military personnel aren't too impressed with the abilities of pilots and officers and to a certain extent the rank and file in these, quote, armies of the Middle East. So keep all that in mind when you hear these discussions about the formation of Arab armies to deal with the Islamic State. And I don't know how much I can add to what I've said. I think I said a while back, we were told about 8 months ago that we were going to handle this with airstrikes. This president seems to think that almost anything can be handled with airstrikes. And there were airstrikes in the former Yugoslavia, and in the end, they ended up having to put K-4 and I-4 in there. So they ended up having to put interpose international forces, and they're still there to prevent those groups from fighting each other. And the solution in those situations is long-term troop presence, international troop presence, which keeps these people separated, and hopefully over the years, you know, in decades, they can create a history of working together. And in that way, we can reduce the potential for, you know, a particular area to turn into World War III. That's the chief, that ought to be the chief concern of the United States foreign policy, is we don't want these wars, these situations, these conflicts, and there will be situations and conflicts. We don't want them in the Middle East or in Eastern Europe to become generalized conflicts, because when they do, then they threaten everybody else's peace. Above all that, you know, you're going to hear from people, well, it's all about oil. A little less so with the discovery of oil all over the place that's now accessible through technology. But I've always said that oil is a perfectly reasonable national security concern for everyone. It's certainly a national security concern for the Chinese. It is a national security concern for the United States. It is a national security concern for the oil-producing countries who sell to the rest of the world, including the United States. So you don't just pass off and say, well, natural gas and oil don't matter. I mean, the reason that we keep the shipping lanes open, the reason that we enforce international treaties along these lines, is so that we can keep the trade flowing, and the what comes out of Saudi Arabia primarily is oil, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. Do we send troops to protect the oil? I think the idea should be to maintain a stasis in the region and to avoid these kinds of conflicts that eventually become a wider, potentially much more dangerous conflict. That's one of the things that I think that we ought to be working on. I'm not sure how I would describe the president's foreign policy. I've said this a bunch of different times. I don't know how you would describe what the president is doing. Just in terms of schools, the people I've talked to, you know, academics, they don't know whether they would describe his policy as a liberal foreign policy, which generally tends to be more interventionist, or a realist foreign policy, which tends to be, you know, more recognizing of the powers that be in the region and working with people that we can work with, regardless of how we may feel about the region or trying to accomplish a longer-term goal through intervention. I don't know what you would call this president's policies. You know, it's clear, though, that what we're doing is not necessarily creating a more stable Middle East. A nuclear-powered Iran, an Iran that appears to have gotten the best of the United States in nuclear negotiations, sets a precedent for all the other nations to do the same thing. It has the reverse effect. I mean, I remember Bill Clinton, and I remember discussing when we went through these negotiations with the North Koreans. I remember the point being made that, well, maybe these countries should have nuclear weapons because a nuclear capability takes them to a higher level of responsibility, and they have to then start acting a little bit more responsibly. I don't know if that's ever been proven. I think in the case of North Korea, they certainly haven't used their nuclear weapon, but they threaten to all the time, and I don't know how responsible that is. A nuclear-powered Iran, or an Iran that isn't even nuclear-powered, but is seen by the other countries in the region as getting the best of the United States in these negotiations, is very dangerous, because these other countries in the region, Saudi Arabia in particular, and the Sunnis in Iraq, are very suspicious of Iranian goals in the region. So that's one of the reasons that the Islamic State has been able to get hold, you know, in terms of the imagination of the Sunnis, you know, and some of the people in the Awakening movement that work with the Americans when during this surge. And this is why David Petraeus has been critical of the president's policy, because we spent a lot of money and time and effort and treasure and blood to get these awakening people to work with us and stabilize and end the terror situation during the occupation of Iraq. So now what has happened is in the power vacuum, the Shiites would not share power in Iraq, and they kind of pushed the Sunnis out, and the Sunnis then turned to these, and we're talking about tribes, literally, turned to ISIL because they're concerned about Iran. They're concerned about the Shiites, you know, Sadr City and all those people. So we're talking about tribal conflict, and we're talking about a tribal conflict that comes under these religious guidelines. And Iran that is seen in the region as the stronger horse, for better or for, you know, for whatever reason, is not a good thing. It's a potentially dangerous thing. And so the next president is going to be left with this whole question of what do we do? And I'm starting to think about what should Republican candidates say. And the reason I say that is, if you look at the Democrats, I wouldn't trust Elizabeth Warren with U.S. foreign policy. I don't trust Hillary Clinton with U.S. foreign policy because we still haven't figured out what happened with Benghazi. And honestly, I really can't find an accomplishment by Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. You know, I'm pretty sure that it's fair to say that most of the U.S. foreign policy was run out of the White House, the National Security Agency and the National Security Council, you know, Susan Rice and the Chief of Staff and Valerie Jarrett. And it's a political foreign policy more designed to create a political legacy for the president or to get him reelected. I mean, that was the whole thing that I think really contributed to the reelection of President Obama, was getting the troops out of Iraq, because that's what people wanted. It would have been a tougher road to hoe for him to have said we're going to delay the departure until we know that things are going to get straightened out. That would have given him a stronger hand with Iran. He is in a position now of actually working with Iran when it comes to the Islamic State, because we don't really have any presence there. You know, I noticed that they're slowing down the departure from Afghanistan for similar reasons. So I don't know. Has he learned his lesson? Is that the military or is that him? I don't know. So Jim Webb, who is a senator, you know, kind of a conservative Democrat, although I don't really think he's that conservative. And I don't think that I'm not sure what I think of his foreign policy views. He's presented himself as a friend of the soldier. And a friend to the veteran. I don't know what that means for foreign policy. Being liked and liking the veterans for whatever reason, even if it's admirable, doesn't necessarily make a foreign policy. So when you look at the Republican candidates, I think the first thing that they should do, and I don't know that they should say anything specific about what they do, but I think one of the things that they can say is what we need is a more stable longer-term policy. We need some policy goals. We need to say, what are we actually trying to do? And I couldn't tell you what the president is trying to do. And I don't think that President Obama actually has any foreign policy goals. I think most of his goals are domestic and political. Talk about being a divider and not a uniter. Most of his goals are domestic. Most of his goals are political. Most of his goals are ideological. And I don't see much of a portfolio there in terms of foreign policy. So the next guy in really needs to have a cogent concept of what they want to do. They need to be able to tell the American people, here's what our foreign policy goals are going to be. This hasn't worked, and here's why. And it needs to be credible enough that people can say, yeah, that makes sense. And it's not, they're going to get debated, but they're going to have to be able to, understand the nuts and bolts of long-term policy and history. And this is where you get into the academic interpretation of foreign policy as a science. I mean, literally, it's almost like a social science, and it's taught that way. And so academics know all the details, and everybody has their academics that they go to, and everybody has their go-to guy that they go to. But it's very complex understanding these different schools and what they're doing. And I would encourage all of us, and I'm going to say this again, you know, you can look at the headlines and you can react, or you can think to yourself, what kind of foreign policy does the United States have to have? What's going to happen when President Obama leaves office? I think this thing is going to blow up. I think the situation is dire. The things that I'm reading about the reaction of of leaders, whether it's Sisi in Egypt or the king in Jordan, King Hussein, or even some of the Saudis. Their reactions to our foreign policy, especially trying to get this Iran deal at any cost, is not good. So we may see this blow up before Obama leaves office in a little more than a year. I hope that doesn't happen, but that's kind of an update on foreign policy. It's complicated, but I think people, I hear a lot of rhetoric on the right about foreign policy, but I don't think there's any. And here's the lines in the Republicans. Here's the lines. The Paul people don't want us to get involved in any foreign conflicts. And the question you have to ask now is it realistic to be 100% non-interventionist in today's world? You know, what happens if we aren't involved? And I think, you know, if we don't have a strong foreign policy, that's a question. And when I say strong foreign policy, and that means we're going to protect our interests. And if we don't do that, then what's going to happen in the Middle East? What happens in Eastern Europe? What happens with Russia? What happens with China? Those are important questions. That's an important question. And so the Paul group and the libertarian group doesn't want us to do anything. And I don't know if that's realistic. On the other hand, the moderate group, the John McCain and the Jeb Bush, they just want to go back to the 1980s foreign policy. And that's not realistic either, because you can't go back to the 1980s foreign policy. I hope this guy doesn't... I hope Mr. Adventurer here in this giant SUV doesn't pull my door off. I've got my door open, and this guy's towing... This is a giant one of these SUVs, plus a car. Ugh. I'm going to have to get in there and pull the door open. Hang on. Oh, he stopped. Okay, that's good. So I think those are important questions. And then, I suppose there's a religious contingent, the Mike Huckabees and the Ted Cruz people, but I think supporting Israel, and, you know, I don't have a problem supporting Israel. They've been a long-term, ally of the United States, but they have their own goals too, and sometimes they're not aligned with U.S. goals, and we have to be careful about having a knee-jerk support Israel at all costs reaction. And the religious interpretation of what's going on in the Middle East worries me a little bit, because it's very similar in that it at the root of a lot of it is the apocalypse. Well, in all ways, that is at the root of the Islamic State. They're trying to bring the apocalypse on. So that's what you've got in the Republican Party. And as far as the Democrats are concerned, you've got Samantha Powers at the State Department, or Samantha Power, I can never tell if it's plural or not, who wants to intervene to save children, but doesn't want to have a robust foreign policy that protects U.S. interests, because, you know, corporations are bad and evil and money is an evil and all that stuff. And then you have the progressives. I don't know that they have a foreign policy. I don't know that they have a foreign policy in the progressives group. I mean, you have a progressive president, and I'm not sure what their foreign policy is. And then the mainstream Democrats are people like Jack Brooks. I don't even know if Jack Brooks is still in office, but who is a long-term military supporter, sort of the Sam Nunn variety of a conservative Democrat that was the conservative Democrat cold warrior, as opposed to conservative Democrat or liberal Democrats like Ted Kennedy that didn't want to support things like the peacemaker and military expansion in an effort to deal with Russia during the Cold War situation. So, you know, the Democrats have an interesting dichotomy of foreign policy, but they really don't have any foreign policy ideas. And unfortunately, neither do the Republicans. And as I said about 6 months ago, in fact, I may have said it in one of the early podcasts, in 2016, there's a very good possibility that foreign policy will end up being the primary issue. These other issues, the economy, and I want to talk about that in a future podcast. These other issues like the economy and the middle class and inequality and social issues, racism and things of that nature, being a uniter, not a divider. I kind of alluded to that in the previous podcast. I don't think they're going to be as important as the potential for something in the world to just spin out of control, whether it's you know, North Korea has been relatively quiet lately, but North Korea or the Islamic State or something that happens because all of these Middle Eastern countries are, you know, sort of, I wouldn't say racing pell-mell towards mobilization. That sounds like World War One, but racing toward, well, not even racing, but moving toward creating their own joint command and their own joint armies, which may not be a bad thing. You know, we have to think about and talk about whether or not that we've asked them and wanted them to work together and work with us for years. And now they want to do that. So, you know, is that a bad thing? Something to think about. So that is podcast 344. It turned out that I did have enough power to get this thing down, and that's pretty cool. This podcast is sponsored by Ryan Plumbing and Heating. I'm just going to tell you, I asked Greg what I should talk about in these podcasts this month, and he said, just tell people that we do emergency service. We get a lot of emergency service calls, and we're always available for emergency service. And the best way that I can describe that to you through words is, think of it as a big sticker that you put on your water heater. And if you're in the middle of a dinner party and the ceiling collapsed because you have a leak of some kind, or I can remember leaving that house one night and turning around and seeing water pouring into the entryway because a pipe had burst in one of the bathrooms because it was below zero outside, and these bathrooms were just at the window line downstairs. So, you know, Ryan Plumbing is the place to call for emergency service, whatever it is. Also, to get your AC checked, 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, metro-wide from St. Paul. And that means the suburbs, too. Don't forget, Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul. Again, I got to thank the digital sponsors of the Bob Davis Podcast, the From the Bunker blog, sponsored by Complete Home Service and Remodeling. They are contractors. Brent and Julie can take care of your home or business needs. They do great work. Basements, garages, special rooms, kitchens, whatever you need. Talk to Brent and Julie. They can hook you up. You click on that banner at the top of the From the Bunker blog or the front top of the Bob Davis Podcast page, takes you to their business site, and you can see what they do. Also, sponsored by Mad Case Studio, specializing in quality original automotive artwork. These are paintings of cars, and people love original artwork. Some, you know, how people get their houses painted, you know, they have an artist work up when they buy a new house or build a new house, they have an artist paint a house. Mad K Studios does cars, and they do other stuff, but they do that, and that is a really nice thing to have, especially if you have a classic car, right? So click on these banners and all the banners of the Bob Davis Podcast sponsors for more info on those sponsors at thebobdavispodcast.com. Got to thank you guys for your donations and your support and the excitement, and even the people that are commenting on Facebook and Twitter about Mobile Podcast Command Unit 8, which I posted a picture from this burned out, broken building in Texas. There's all these places along the highway that are just fried, and it's because they've moved on down to the next, they put a new exit in and they don't need that building anymore. So I pulled up in front of one of those and took a picture of the mobile unit, and that was really cool. So I appreciate all of your comments and all the help. I'm getting lots of emails about, this is what you got to do about electricity. Thank you, Steve. I'm getting emails about, this is what kind of fuel you should put in it, and this is how you deal with the oil changes. And that is actually really, really supportive and just as good as a donation. So appreciate the input, and thanks again for the donations. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com or on any of the apps that serve up podcasts automatically once you subscribe. iTunes, of course, is the granddaddy. Stitcher.com for people who have non-Apple devices. Stitcher works really well. Or tune in. Thanks for liking, sharing, favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter. And I'm on Instagram at bdavis7843. And that's about it. Thanks for listening. I guess it's on to Phoenix. Well, first on to Gallup and then on to Phoenix on this Sunday. Podcasting all the way. The Bob Davis Podcast's road trip.
You've got a passion. You've got a passion. It's called peace. You've got a passion. You've got a passion.